This is Terry Crosby,
Andy Steiger,
Steve Kim.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. We're on location. We are in Denver, Colorado.
Mile High City, right here.
It is snowy outside, and the mountains are in the distance. It's gorgeous.
Actually, I'm a little disappointed that I really can't see the mountains a whole lot from where we are right now.
Yeah.
But whenever you go to a building that's anything higher than like five stories, you can see the Rocky Mountains over there, and it's gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Beautiful location. Beautiful day.
I'm feeling really close to you guys right now.
Like, yeah. That's because you are close.
We're actually recording in a room.
We're in an Airbnb.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. We've got our Yeti mic out.
This little mic.
We're doing it old school. This is how we started, with just a little microphone on a table and talking. We actually have our own studio that we use normally for this podcast. So if the quality doesn't sound as good as normal, that's why. So here we are at Evangelical Philosophical Society.
And the ETS.
Evangelical Theological Society. So if our listeners are not familiar with what this all is, Evangelical Theological Society and Evangelical Philosophical Society all get together once a year to present papers and different things. And they move around. So 2 years ago, I was here for the first time, here as in the ETS and EPS meetings, attended for the first time, and it was in San Antonio, Texas. Last year, which I missed, but you guys went in Providence?
Yeah, Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah, right next to Boston, right?
Yeah, and then we went to Boston as well. This is actually my fifth
time.
Yeah,
this is my third.
This is your third.
Yeah.
And just to explain how it works, because some people don't know about this, and nor do they know how it works, and we wanted to, you know, expose more Christians to this scholarship that's taking place. It's significant, especially if you're in ministry, listening to this podcast. You really need to know about this. There is an organization out there called the AAR, the American Academy of Religious Studies, and they move around the United States from location to location each year, holding a massive conference with people of all stripes and colors.
So they say there's about 3,000 to 4,000 people here.
For ETS?
ETS, yeah.
Yeah, but the AAR.
Oh, the AAR. Okay.
It's much bigger.
Yeah.
Thousands, thousands. So it's religion of every stripe that comes to that one. So that one is going to be taking place in the next couple of days here. But so ETS, EPS takes place before that one. And then after ETS, EPS, then there's SBL, which is the Society
of Biblical Literature.
Right. And so, and then there's the AAR that's taking place in and amongst that. Now, for me, this is really convenient because there's other meetings, society meetings that are taking place as well. So I also come for the Polanyi Society meetings, which is a part of my PhD work. So I get a whole helping of a lot of different thought when I come here. It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's just in one trip.
Yeah. Yeah, and a bonus for me and Steve is that we get to go to an apologetics conference that is tied in with EPS.
Yeah. And so what happens is Craig Hazen and his crew monopolize on the fact that there are a number of great thinkers that are here for ETS, EPS. And so they host a conference, an apologetics conference, in that location, just for anybody who would like to attend.
Now, if you're not sure who Craig Hazen is, he is the founder and director of the Master of Arts in Christian Apologetics program at Biola University. Andy and I, we both went through that program, and he's the guy who basically put that program together. And he is also, he's got his PhD in religious studies, and so he is an expert in comparative religions. And we've had him out, actually, at our very first apologetics conference as a keynote speaker.
Yeah, he was actually out for like the first four of our conferences,
And he's spoken many times there, and also they're representing Biola University at our conference and things like that. I mean, for me, this is like nerd haven, right?
Yeah.
And I go to these meetings. When do I ever just get to see Gary Habermas walking down the hallway just 1 minute, and then I turn around, there's Mike Lacona just looking around, looking for his session, and then I go down a little farther down the road, and there's like William Lane Craig walking by with his wife, Jen. And I'm like, whoa.
And a lot of these big names actually sit in these sessions too, right? They'll come in and just plop down wherever there's an open chair.
Yeah, like Frank Turk and I were in a number of sessions together. And, and a number of other great thinkers. They're all here. And it's great because they're presenting, but they're also here learning. And it's a way for us to continue to be in fellowship with one another. Oftentimes, this is where we'll see each other and talk about new events that are coming up and collaborate and really sharpen each other. I absolutely love this event.
And the thing about these meetings is that it's not just about, I mean, as much as it is about learning about what's new on the horizon and everything, all the latest discussions that are happening, but it is also a lot about networking, because all the who's who of in the evangelical kind of scholarly world, they're all here. All of the people that I've been watching on YouTube, it's kind of bizarre seeing them walking around, right? When do I ever get a chance to kind of, you know, shake their hands and, you know, get my name out there and make sure that they know my face later down the road? If I ever, for example, want to invite them to our conference, say, hey, say, do you remember I introduced myself to you? You know, it's great for that kind of stuff too. And I'm sure for you, Andy, you know, this is a great networking opportunity, especially for your PhD work and all that stuff.
Yeah, and getting book endorsements and a number of other things. It's for those wanting to host conferences or those who are getting into church work in general, it's good to get your face out there and meet different people so that they can see, oh, okay, Steve Kim, you know, he's a normal dude. He's not some crazy weirdo. And I would like to work with him in the future, right? It's sometimes it's just that simple. Other times it's about finding out about books that are out that you didn't know are out there that are great resources for people that are maybe thinking through different subjects. Maybe you're thinking through that subject and you want to read up on it. For example, I didn't know that Dr. Craig wrote a new book on the atonement. It just came out. It was published by Cambridge. And so I'm going to go get that book, right? So we heard him give a great talk.
And a bonus for that is that there's a hefty discount on these books.
Yeah. Right.
There's so you bring extra, or you bring a big luggage bag for one.
Yeah, I noticed that Andy brought a whole suitcase just for books.
Yeah.
And if you actually go to the exhibitor hall, what really stands out to you is that all the major Protestant Christian publishers like Zondervan, B&H, you know, like all these guys, Hendrickson IVP. Publishers. Yeah, they're all here, and they give you some hefty discounts, like 40%, 50%. And I myself picked up a couple books. Sometimes you get free books. It's like, here you go. You fill out this card. Just give us your contact info, which we will sell to Google for lots of money. But then I got a free book. And had it. I actually got The Creator and the Cosmos that Hugh Ross wrote. And Hugh Ross was actually right there. So I'm like, hey, while I'm here, can you autograph this thing for me? I'm like, I'm putting my groupie on, and I'm getting all these autographs. Anyway, fun time.
I guess one of the things I really appreciate is when you go into these rooms, the guys are who's presenting give a paper, and it's usually talking about the paper, but it's the Q&A afterwards, you know, that they have to answer questions of what they've brought to this conference.
Yeah.
A new idea, a new thought.
There's always Q&A.
There's always Q&A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even in a huge session, you have to be able to respond to what you've said. I love it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can you imagine having William Lane Craig sitting on your session? Wasn't there a guy here who was actually critiquing one of his arguments, the moral argument?
Yeah, the moral arguing.
He's from, Paul Franks.
Yeah, he's from Tyndale.
Yeah.
I went to that one. Yeah.
Yeah, we love Paul. And it was funny because I was talking with Paul before his session, and I'm like, so, you think Dr. Craig's going to come? He's like, I sure hope not. One thing you got to understand about this conference is this is, like was mentioned, this is Nerd Haven here. And there are some of the nerdiest topics you could imagine being presented. And so we thought we'd just take a moment to share with you the sessions. Before we tell you the sessions we did learn from, we figured we'd tell you the sessions we missed. Here's a couple that we didn't make it out for. I'll start off with one. I didn't make it out for the impact of Jonathan Goforth's pneumatology on early 20th century Chinese Christianity. I missed that one.
Oh, but, man, I missed that one, too.
some of these sessions are so esoteric.
Yeah.
It's not even funny.
Well, there's one that I didn't get to, and maybe you guys got to it. It's called The Impassibility, Patripassianism, and Eternal Functional Subordination in Trinitarian Debate. I didn't get to that one.
You didn't make that one?
I didn't make that one. I overlooked that one.
Yeah, here's one that I missed. This one's called The Ketef Hinnom Inscriptions and the Existence of Apotropaic Texts in the Hebrew Bible. Didn't make it to that one.
Well said, though.
I actually had to practice saying this.
Here's one I didn't make it to. Communion in a Cave, The Sacramental Liturgy of the Scots at Westminster. I missed that one.
Another one I missed. It's called To Benedict or Not to Benedict. Amidst the pediological enthronement of transgenderism.
Now you're just being mean. We actually know who gave that song.
Who gave that one. Our own Kyle Meeker.
Yeah, shout out to you, Kyle.
I heard it was an excellent talk, actually. It was well received.
Yeah.
But I didn't make that one. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Kyle.
Yeah. There was some competition. And now, if you're wondering what we're talking about, a lot of these sessions happen parallel to each other, so you really kind of have to pick and choose which one you're going to go to, and it's just sometimes it's just outright heartbreaking. I'm like, there are so many good sessions.
We all have a book in our hand right now, and there's 62 pages of sessions that you can attend in a 3-day period, and it's just solid.
And here's one that I didn't make it to. This one's called The Significance of the 17 Vaticanus Distichmi Obelis Symbols for New Testament Textual Criticism.
I missed that one, too. Here was my favorite that I unfortunately missed. Burning of incense in Egyptian temple rituals, background to the sin of Nadab and Abihu? Missed that one.
Well said.
Yeah. Really wanted to hit that one. But.
Yeah, that did. So good.
But what we wanted to do on the show is talk to you about some of the ones that we did go to. Mm-hmm. Can't tell you about all the ones that we went to, but some of those that we went to that were actually really meaningful and discussed some important topics. I think maybe a really practical one to begin with is Paul Copan. He gave a talk called Deconversion, Why People Leave the Christian Faith and Return to It. So, you know, he mentioned a number of different reasons why, you know, people will leave the faith and why they will return to the faith. But one of my personal favorites in that I think was really important that he discussed was that there is a number of people, sadly, that will leave the faith that go to Bible college. And one of the reasons why they leave the faith is because the Bible college has done a really good job at deconstructing their faith, but has spent no time reconstructing their faith. Mm-hmm. Those are those people. And I got to tell you, the reason I guess why this is significant to me is I felt like one of those people. I went to Bible college and I heard a whole lot of criticism about the New Testament and, you know, who critiques what and who borrowed from who. The list goes on. However, no time spent giving me reasons why I should trust that it is written early, for example, that there are good reasons to believe that the Bible is accurate. Reasons to believe that this is an authoritative, God-inspired work of the Holy Spirit.
And I myself have come through Bible college, but there is almost this kind of atmosphere in some circles where it's almost more virtuous to question the Bible, be skeptical about it, because then you have this sense of intellectual superiority that you are actually thinking more critically than taking it blindly. But what I see is, well, if you're just doing that just for the sake of being skeptical or just for the sake of having this kind of intellectual superiority about you, ironically enough, to me, that a lot of the times there's just more blind faith there. Often a lot more than somebody who has critically thought through these issues and come to the conclusion that actually, yeah, this is reliable stuff that we're seeing in the New Testament, for example. I just find it really heartbreaking because a lot of my friends that I graduated with, well, I shouldn't say a lot of my friends, but I know a number of them that are now far from God after having come through that process.
On the flip side of that, Paul Copan was sharing about how those people who came back to the faith or came to the faith for the first time. And one of those that he shared, and this is one thing I love about Paul Copan, is his sessions, you're always bound to find a juicy quote that yeah. you can put in your holster and use later. So here is one of those for you. This is a quote from Michael Bird. It comes from Christianity Today, April 16th, 2014.
And by the way, he's Australian, so just imagine the Aussie accent as you're hearing this.
and if you, so if you want to find it, the article's called How God Became Jesus and How I Came to Faith in Him. And this is what he says. He says, Bart Ehrman's narrative suggests the more educated you are, the less likely you are to believe. My life proves otherwise. And here what he does next, for those of you that are used to reading the Apostle Paul, is he's going to mimic the way the Apostle Paul speaks. And so this is great. I've got my own deconversion story to match his. Some have great confidence in skeptical scholarship, and I once did, perhaps more than anyone else. If anyone thinks they are assured in their beliefs, I was more committed, born of unbelieving parents, never baptized or dedicated, on scholarly credentials, a PhD from a secular university. As to zeal, mocking the church. As to ideological righteousness, totally radicalized. But whatever intellectual superiority I thought I had over Christians, I now count it as sheer ignorance. Indeed, I count everything in my former life as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing the historical Jesus, who is also the risen Lord.
Yeah, all of that in the Aussie accent. He's actually here as a guest lecturer.
Yeah, I saw him.
He's not quite what I thought he was. Like, here's this tiny man, but he's full of great sense of humor, but he doesn't compromise on his intellectual substance either. He just uses that kind of sense of humor to bring his stuff out. But coming back to what you were saying earlier, I really enjoyed that session too. Just kind of looking at how, like when I'm here, a lot of the sort of the typical internet atheistic arguments that you come across, it just seems so out of touch with what's actually going on.
That's actually a decent segue into a session that Steve, you and I were attending.
So yeah, the session that Andy's talking about was presented by Daniel von Vachter. He's from Liechtenstein, all the way from Europe.
He has a great accent, by the way.
Yeah, he's got this German accent with a kind of British English accent. But anyway, it's just fascinating to listen to. I could listen to him all day.
All day.
His session was titled, Divine Interventions Are Not Violations of the Laws of Nature. Mm-hmm. So what he's referring to there is David Hume, because he is by far, I would say, by far the most influential in terms of arguments against miracles, our skepticism about miracles.
Yeah.
Because one of the things he says is, well, miracles can't happen because it violates the laws of nature. By definition, laws of nature, you know, can't be violated, basically. Mm-hmm. Already, if you caught that, it's very circular.
Yeah, very persuasive to people in that most people, and this was one of his points, most people haven't just taken a moment to think about it. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the argument that Hume's making, it's not a good argument at all. In fact, it has a number of issues that we'll just briefly highlight here.
Basically, what he was arguing was that when you see a chain of causation, there's a certain direction to it. So whenever there is an event of type X that is followed by event type Y, and that is followed by event type Z, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But that's usually how it works in a closed system.
He refers to this as regularities of succession. Basically, this idea that just one domino hits another domino hits another domino.
Yeah.
You know, physical forces interacting with one another.
But then if there's any kind of intervention, are you actually breaking the laws of nature? And the way he was going about it was that there are two types of causation. So one is that sort of causation that we just talked about, this kind of naturalistic, you know, if this happens, then this has to follow, so on and so forth. So there's that kind of material causation.
Maybe, let's give an example real quick. For example, if I were to pick Terry up above my head, which sometimes I would like to do, and then I just drop him, the laws of nature tell us right, that Terry's just going to fall to the ground. And he's going to hit really hard, like he did the other day when he was riding his bike and his tire
yeah, I did.
slipped out from under him and he went crashing under his head and actually cracked his helmet.
In three places.
In three places. That's what's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're wondering why Terry's the way he is, that's part of it.
We love you, Terry.
Yeah. So that's what the laws of nature. That's what's going to happen. That's what gravity's going to do, right? He's going to fall and he's going to hit the ground.
Yeah. That's one type of causation. And then there's another type of causation, which is agent causation, something that happens by choice. Right. And so
let's imagine that I lift Terry up over my head and drop him onto the ground.
Again.
But this time, Steve Kim goes, "Andy, you monster." And he intervenes and runs over and dives. You can imagine doing some sort of sweet, like, ninja backflip and grabs Terry before he hits the ground and gently, you know, brings him to his feet.
Or more likely, I'll just get squashed.
All right.
Dude, you're a big dude.
I am, yeah.
You're not fat, but you're, like, big. And I'm just this scrawny little guy, right? But that's the thing, right? There's agent causation. So I made this choice. That's why humanity is sometimes referred to as being semi-transcendental, because we seem to have this capacity to make a choice to do something and therefore starting another chain of causation.
Right? An intervention in the laws of nature.
Right. And so I didn't break any law by catching or attempting to catch Terry. I just introduced another chain of causation through my choice, and these two chains of causation then came into contact, and one got interfered.
In other words, Steve rescuing Terry from hitting the ground did not violate the laws of gravity.
Exactly.
They intervened on the laws of gravity, introducing a new succession. Mm-hmm. Now, that means then, on Hume's argument against miracles, that every time an agent such as Steve were to intervene and say, Terry falling to the ground, that would be a miracle.
Right. So then this world is then just filled with miracles. Every time one of the 7 billion people around the world chooses to do something, that should be considered a miracle because there was an intervention. Because I'm thinking, well, if God as a personal being intervenes, why should that be considered a miracle? But when we choose to do something to intervene, that's not a miracle.
Ultimately, Daniel's point was that this is ultimately what God would be doing, mm-hmm. right? God is intervening. He's not breaking the mm-hmm. laws of nature.
And one of the things that he pointed out that I thought was really interesting was just his almost irreverence for this kind of thing, because he was talking about, like, this is actually a really bad argument, but people just, because they learned it in university, they parrot it without really critically thinking about it, right? And so that was a really good kind of wake-up call for me, because I'm thinking, well, I should apply that to myself too. Like, are there things that I just take to be true just on sheer authority alone, right? I mean, not that mm-hmm. taking things by authority in and of itself is wrong, but are there things that I'm taking that I could be more critical of that I'm just taking blindly?
And that's the interesting part is, and this was one of his points, people have been critical about this argument for a long time, and you will often see this in philosophy where an argument has been shown to be fallacious for a very long time, but yet somehow continues to be perpetuated in the university. Right. And this would be one of those arguments, and that's why he was semi-irreverent about it, just going, I can't believe that this is still being held on to. It's been critiqued throughout history. Right. It's been shown to be absolutely flawed, and yet here we keep seeing it. If you want to know more about this, Daniel wrote an article for the European Journal for Philosophy of Religion in 2015. The article title is "Miracles Are Not Violations of the Laws of Nature Because the Laws Do Not Entail Regularities." So if you'd like to read more about that, you can find it there.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Another session that you guys thought particularly memorable.
I went to one. I didn't see you there.
Yeah, missed that one.
You missed that one, yeah.
What was it?
It was called The Virtue of Open-Mindedness. benefits and risks. I've been thinking about this lately just because we have lots of conversations with people, right? Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, he was basically saying we're open-minded to people's listening to our beliefs, and we want them to agree with us. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for us to apply it to ourselves, to be open to somebody else. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about here, where there's so many, you know, papers being delivered on a SkyTrain somewhere that you're talking with somebody. This is just such an important point, I think, in having a good conversation with people. So, I mean, one of the theological arguments was he just pointed to Matthew 7:12, where it says, in everything do to others as you would have them do to you. It wasn't really a big intellectual session, but I think it was very practical, yeah. On a very practical level, how we can engage with others and have some intellectual humility along the way.
Mm. Yeah, what's interesting about that is at our conference this year, we have the Apologetics Conference taking place in March, first weekend of March. And one of the people that we have coming is Daryl Bach, who is here, of course, at ETS giving papers. And he is, without question, one of the foremost New Testament scholars, does incredible work. And one of the things he's going to talk about is how would Jesus vote? And one of the things he's talking about in that is just simply that thing you're getting at, Terry, is he's not going to be telling you how to vote. More, he's going to be telling you about the kind of attitude you should come to when you're having dialogue with people, where you're respectfully hearing what they're saying and respectfully sharing what you think. And as you are, you know, living as a Christian in this world, how do you do so graciously where, yeah, you want people to listen to you, but you're also going to need to listen to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was at Crossroads Church in Red Deer, Alberta, a few weeks ago to do a session on conversational tips and tactics for sharing Jesus with your neighbor, basically. I gave them a little action item, and that was, have some genuine curiosity about other people. Get to know them. So ask them questions like, you know, where do you come from? You know, what's your family like? You know, what are your pet peeves? People love talking about those, right? And what makes them tick? Ask them a lot of these questions. You know, what are your opinions on certain hot button political issues or religious issues, whatever it might be? And then I told them the trick to this exercise is don't try to refute them. Just listen to what they're saying and ask clarifying questions without trying to refute them. Now, you may have your ideas about why certain things that this person is thinking might be false, but don't bring that out yet. Just listen. Just practice listening.
And make sure you understand them correctly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so ask them, well, tell me more. Like, did I hear you correctly when you said this? This is what I heard. You know, all those kinds of things. Just ask them clarifying questions and listen. I don't always do this perfectly either. But man, like when I do manage to do that, the conversation just takes on a whole another kind of life. And the kind of the air between the person that I'm talking to and myself, it changes. I can almost physically feel it. And when you do that, they actually return in kind, I found, right? Yeah. And they want to know more about me, and they're willing to listen.
You know, J.P. Moreland gave a great example of this in his session on secularism and scientism. It was a fantastic session, and in it, he tells a story about how he was invited to share the gospel with a group of people, and he came, and there was one guy there that was hostile to the gospel.
A physicist from Johns Hopkins University.
Yeah.
Right? A very bright guy.
And I guess they're at the punch bowl or whatever, and they meet, and this physicist professor says basically that he thinks Christianity is a bunch of hooey.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's a scientist and he holds to the facts and nothing but, you know, only those things that you can quantify in the laboratory.
And
that,
scientifically prove.
Yeah. That those are the things he believes. And JP just said that he just allowed this guy just to continue on for a while, a couple minutes, you know, listening patiently. And then at the end, after he's listened to him, he says, you know, I just want to raise one question from what I've heard. He says, I've been listening to you for a while now, and I hear what you're saying. He goes, but can you share with me just one of the convictions that you've brought up thus far that you believe? You've said a lot of things about what you believe are true. Could you just share one of those that you could quantify in the laboratory, that you could put through this scientific method and prove is true standard?
Because he made some 20, 30 assertions, JP said, right? And he said, out of those, can you name me one that you can scientifically prove? And there was nothing.
Yeah. Right. And that then starts this other conversation, right? And as he had listened to him, now there's this opportunity where they can continue to dialogue.
I was intrigued because he linked virtue with open-mindedness. Hmm. Because a lot of people...
In the session you were in.
In the session I was in. A lot of people, I think, are scared of the word open-mindedness, words open-mindedness, because we might get sucked into something. You know what I mean? But he went through benefits as well as risks in doing this. But clearly, in the end, came out with, this is a virtue that we need to develop.
If I could just speak to that.
Yeah.
One of the things for me is, as I have grown in confidence in my faith, in the truth of Christianity, oddly enough, I guess it's ironic that it leads me to be more open to hearing from other people.
Yeah.
I'm not threatened to hear the craziest of ideas. Or they're not always crazy, but I'm quite open to hearing any idea because I'm not threatened by that.
There's less fear.
Yeah.
We have some more knowledge and our fear kind of subsides, right? We understand more and we can address more. I mean, that's apologetics. We got to learn the arguments, learn the discussions that are happening. All right, that's been a great discussion today, and we look forward to some more sessions this afternoon and taking in an apologetics conference in the next few days. Andy has a lot of different meetings that he has to go to, so we still have a lot to do here in the next 3 or 4 days. Thanks for joining us again, listeners. The APC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more things to think about.